Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, dozens of Hudson Valley residents were days away from becoming U.S. citizens until the federal government pulled the plug. Ulster County Clerk Taylor Bruck joins us live to tell us why the ceremony was canceled and what it means for people waiting to take the oath. The Center for Community Resources is a new crisis center in Honesdale. We'll talk with Outreach Coordinator Victoria Toomey about their mission and the services helping families every day. Holiday cheer and unique finds. Sullivan Public's Holiday Market is back with plenty of festive surprises. And we've got local economic perspective with our Monday check-in with our own James B. Huntington. That's all coming up after the hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments today in a case that could upend the balance of powers in the federal government. As NPR's Andrea Hsu reports, the Trump administration has asked the high court to overturn a 90-year precedent.
In 1935, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that Congress could put limits on the president's power to fire heads of some independent agencies. The agency in question was the Federal Trade Commission. Today, the court considers whether those limits are constitutional. The new case started with Trump's removal of FTC Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter in March. She was told her service was inconsistent with the administration's priorities. Slaughter sued, calling her firing illegal, and a lower court agreed with her, citing the 1935 case. The Trump administration says that ruling was flawed and should be overturned. They argue the Constitution puts the president in charge of the entire executive branch and Congress cannot siphon that power away from him. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
Stocks open mixed this morning as China's trade surplus grows. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped about 81 points in early trading.
China's exports to the United States have dropped sharply in the face of President Trump's tariffs, but China's still finding plenty of customers elsewhere around the world. The country's overall exports in November were up nearly 6% from a year ago, and China's trade surplus for the year topped $1 trillion for the first time. Paramount is challenging Netflix over its planned purchase of Warner Brothers Discovery. Paramount's going to shareholders with a counteroffer. President Trump said the Netflix acquisition, quote, could be a problem because the combined company's outsized market share. And one of Berkshire Hathaway's top stock pickers is leaving for a job with J.P. Morgan Chase. Todd Combs also ran Berkshire's Geico insurance business. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Demonstrators in New Orleans are continuing to call for an end to federal immigration operations in their area. Videos are surfacing of masked men chasing people down the streets into their homes. Protesters say the enforcement efforts violate people's rights and create fear. Area resident Christine Ravello is working with activists to warn others when ICE operations are nearby. She says they blow whistles.
We're being kidnapped, okay? They're like hunting us down like we're some type of deer or an animal. We're not. So the story behind the whistle is to let our community know, hey, we're here, don't come out. We have your back.
Despite local Democratic opposition in New Orleans to the effort, Louisiana's Republican governor supports it. A major earthquake has struck the ocean just north of Japan. The U.S. Geological Survey says its magnitude is 7.6. Japanese officials have now issued a tsunami warning. They warn that tsunami waves of nearly 10 feet could wash into central Japan's coast very soon. This is NPR. A committee in Indiana's Republican-led state Senate will take up the issue of redistricting today. President Trump has demanded it. The issue passed the Indiana State House on Friday, but a group of state senators has opposed redistricting. This is intended to help more Republicans win seats in the House of Representatives. More shoppers are outsourcing their work to artificial intelligence. Around a quarter of young Americans use AI to shop. NPR's Amy Held reports this holiday season, online retailers and tech companies are rolling out new AI tools and features.
AI shopping is surging, up more than 600% during last week's Cyber Monday when total spending topped a record $14 billion, according to Adobe Analytics. Thanks in part to AI, which drives higher traffic that ends in purchases compared to non-AI traffic. Vivek Pandya is Adobe Digital Insights lead analyst.
This is the first official season where generative AI is having an influence on shopping journeys.
That may look like letting AI track prices, do virtual try-ons, or just chatting with an AI assistant about gift lists. There are risks and concerns around privacy and fraud. And roughly half of people find the joy of giving still comes from shopping in-store the old-fashioned way. Amy Held, NPR News.
There's been a water leak in the iconic French museum, the Louvre. Officials in the Paris Museum say several hundred documents have been damaged. This comes just weeks after burglars stole priceless gems from the Louvre in broad daylight. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping those in need is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Ulster County's December 12th naturalization ceremony has been abruptly canceled by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, one of several ceremonies scrapped across the Hudson Valley this week. USCIS says there weren't enough candidates to move forward, but local leaders argue the decision is arbitrary and damaging, denying residents the chance to complete the final step in becoming U.S. citizens. Joining us live this morning, Ulster County Clerk-elect Taylor Bruck, who's been calling for the federal government to reinstate the ceremony and restore what he describes as a vital community-centered rite of passage. Mr. Bruck, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
When and how did you first learn that USCIS had canceled the December 12th naturalization ceremony?
Well, they originally canceled them, not just ours, but all upstate ceremonies about 3 weeks ago. They reached out and just said that the December ceremonies were going to be canceled and that there would be no more ceremonies going forward indefinitely. The excuse they gave at that time was that our courts did not meet the statutory requirements necessary for the ceremonies, which we pushed back on that, citing the fact that we do, in fact, meet the statutory requirements, the requirements being a seal and a court clerk with local jurisdiction, all things that we've had for centuries here in our local courts. So they rescinded the cancellations at that time. And then the following week, so that would be last week now, early last week, they canceled them for a different reason. And now they said that there's not enough candidates to be naturalized, which is something we've not heard from them in the past. We typically would just do a smaller ceremony if there wasn't as many as they expected. But this is the first time we've ever heard that there wasn't enough citizens to be naturalized.
And there's no legal minimum requirement for the number of citizens to be naturalized, is there?
No, there's not. It seems to be an internal policy from USCIS. We have reached out, and our Congressman Pat Ryan has sent a letter to the director of USCIS to see what that new quota is, because it's not something that used to exist, and they haven't told us that the policy has changed. So we're trying to get more information from them. But as of right now, the December ceremony is canceled because they said there's not enough.
And how was that communicated to you?
Via email. We followed up to see if our December ceremony was still going to be on after they canceled them for the statutory reasons. And typically USCIS sends us the list of names of folks that are going to be naturalized. So when we asked for the list, they responded to that email and said that we won't be having a ceremony. They did not send a list, and that's the last we've heard from them.
So do you know how many people in Ulster County were expecting to take that oath on December 12th, on Friday?
No, we have no idea. We had asked to do larger ceremonies. Last year, in 2024, we were told that there was a backlog of people waiting to be naturalized, so we started scheduling our ceremonies at larger venues to be able to naturalize more folks at once. So we had asked for up to 100, but no indication as to how close to that number we were going to get, and no idea how many there were waiting. We just know that according to them, it was not enough.
Have you heard directly from any of the affected candidates or their families?
Not any that we know of that we're planning on being at the December ceremony. A few folks have reached out that are at the final stages of the process, that we're concerned whether or not they will be scheduled in the future for one. But I'm not even sure or confident that the folks who were eligible and waiting were notified by USCIS that there was even going to be a ceremony in December, to begin with. I have no idea what the communication between them has been.
As you mentioned, this was not just Ulster, but also Dutchess and Putnam counties all had ceremonies canceled at the same time. Do you see this as a broader shift in policy or practice at USCIS? And you had mentioned that they revised that earlier decision. Are there concerns about consistency and transparency as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the consistency and transparency has been all over the place. This is just the most recent in a string of changes that they've made. More recently, about 6 months ago, they rescinded the policy of reimbursement for local counties. Counties used to get reimbursed per person that they naturalized. And we, again, received an email that just said, we won't be being reimbursed anymore and don't expect to ever be reimbursed again going forward. And Dutchess, Putnam, and Ulster are the most recent ones to have ours canceled, but a number of counties that had ceremonies planned in November had theirs canceled as well. Westchester, I believe, Rockland, Tompkins, really all over the state. So from county to county, they're being canceled for seemingly different reasons. We can't get much information about why these policies are changing. And we just wish that we had more information and, frankly, that nothing would change. There was no problem with our ceremonies being hosted locally. They were wonderful events. All the other county clerks that host them all say the same thing. One of the most patriotic things we have the opportunity to do as clerks. And we're all just kind of confused.
Do you think that New York counties, upstate counties, are being targeted specifically?
You know, I think it's a federal issue. I haven't checked with clerks in other states. But, you know, Democrat and Republican counties are both being affected by this. Like I said, Pat Ryan, our Democratic congressman, has reached out, and so has Mike Lawler, Republican congressman from Putnam County down south. So it's really a bipartisan issue. Both Democrat and Republican lawmakers and representatives want to keep the naturalization ceremonies locally. Legal immigration is something we all generally agree on. So I don't feel it's targeted. I think it's a more broad federal policy change that it seems Immigration Services wants these ceremonies to happen at federal locations where they have more control over what's going on. It just makes it very inconvenient for our local constituents.
What did the local ceremonies provide that, you know, these larger centralized, you know, federal ones perhaps cannot? And you mentioned, you know, it's a shared patriotic celebration.
Absolutely. Well, when you do them at the federal locations, there is no ceremony. It's essentially like going to the DMV. You show up to a window with your paperwork, you take the oath in front of one person, and then you go home a citizen. What we offer locally is more of a celebration. We do it at either the ceremonial courtroom in the Ulster Courthouse or at a local college. So what it does is allow our friends and neighbors to be part of the process and to welcome in our new citizens. And they also act as an educational opportunity. We always invite school groups to attend, and we, the elected officials, stay after and talk to the students about the process. And they're all live streamed when we do them in Ulster County. Radio Kingston live streams them, so folks who have family that might still be in their country of origin can tune in and watch and celebrate along with them. So it goes from really a public celebration and a welcoming ceremony to just a typical administrative function.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Ulster County Clerk Taylor Brock about the abruptly canceled naturalization ceremony in Ulster County and other upstate counties by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. You and other county advocates and leaders had a press conference on Friday to talk about reinstatement. You reached out and you publicly reached out and said, you know, to the government, please reinstate. Have you heard anything back?
No, not at this time. We haven't heard anything. Again, our congressmen have written letters to the director directly. We've sent emails to USCIS for clarification on what that new quota is to make sure that anything we can do to make sure that they happen in 2026, we are ready and willing to do. But as of today, we have not heard a word, no.
Are there any other steps you're taking or the county is taking to press for answers or push for reinstatement?
Not at this time. It's tough to know even what to do. It really makes it difficult when you often don't hear back. You have your lawmakers at the federal level all working on it. Mike Lawler was able to have some success when they canceled them the first time. But these most recent string of cancellations, we're all just kind of shrugging, reaching out to folks in power who might be able to have answers. But when you don't receive any, it's hard to know where to go. And I can't imagine what the folks that are waiting to be naturalized feel, because I'm sure they're in a similar boat where a lot of this process comes down to a small group of people making decisions, and if those people are not responsive or being transparent, we're all left in the dark.
Is that the case for those folks who were planning to be naturalized? Are they left in limbo as well? I mean, if they continue to cancel these ceremonies, what options exist to ensure they aren't left in limbo?
My understanding is they can contact the federal offices themselves. So locally in the Hudson Valley here, the closest ones are in Albany or New York City. We have heard that there have been folks that are being naturalized at the federal facility as recent as last week. So it seems like folks are still being naturalized. It's just a bit slower and potentially more confusing.
Is there anything you'd like to say directly to those folks who were preparing to become citizens this week?
I would just like to apologize to them on behalf of the country. These are folks that have done everything the right way. They've quote unquote come in through the front door. They followed the process, and I'm hopeful that USCIS does reinstate these for 2026. We have really big plans. 2026 is the 250th anniversary of the country, and it being one of the most patriotic things you can do, becoming a naturalized citizen, I would just tell them, hold tight. We're working on it. We're advocating as hard as we possibly can, trying everything we can to make it easier for them, because they certainly shouldn't be being punished for doing it the right way.
That's Ulster County Clerk Taylor Bruck. Mr. Bruck, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime. Thank you, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a conversation with the Center for Community Resources about their mission and upcoming open house. Outreach Coordinator Victoria Toomey joins us to share how they're expanding access to support. This is Radio Chatskill.
The need is growing. More families in our community are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are on the front lines, but they need help. You can make a difference by donating non-perishable food, personal care items, and baby supplies, or by volunteering to support and distribute these donations. It's about nourishing our neighbors. Visit WJFFradio.org for info to help ensure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
Hi, I'm Callison Stratton, host of Liberation Station, a show highlighting the best of female and femme presenting performers. Saturday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting local public radio. From all of us at Radio Catskill, we wish you a safe and festive holiday season and a happy new year.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As more people in our region turn to crisis hotlines and support networks, the Center for Community Resources is a new crisis center in Honesdale working to keep up with growing demand with a mission to connect residents to the help they need. The center is preparing for an open house to raise awareness of its services. Joining us live is Outreach Coordinator Victoria Toomey. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How do you describe the core mission of the Center for Community Resources?
I would say that in a nutshell, our goal is to connect people to those community resources and supports that, you know, improve their everyday life within their, you know, individual communities. We are in 37 counties, so it looks different in each of those. But yeah, I would say just getting people the support that they need.
And new to Honesdale, but as you mentioned, in 37 counties, what or when the organization was founded or in its early days, what need did it set out to address and how has that evolved over time?
Yeah, so CCR was founded in 2002. Initially, the goal was to be a resource hub. So to be a place where anyone going through their mental health journey could come to and get connected to providers or just local community resources that could be helpful. And then over time, we evolved into that provider role. So now we do a variety of different services. We have early intervention, we have IDD services, and what we're here to talk about today is crisis intervention.
Yeah. And what do you think sets this center apart, the center apart from other organizations that might offer similar support in the region?
Yeah. So the goal of the Northeast Regional Crisis Stabilization Center is to provide just a comfortable environment for people to come into when they're in a mental health crisis. I think that it's the first of its kind in Wayne County, so that's really exciting. And I think that that's another thing that will, you know, set us apart just because we are a new place to turn. And I think that the center does a really good job of feeling very comforting and not very clinical. So we want people to come in and just feel kind of at home within the center.
And let's talk about that crisis support. What are those key, you know, programs the center offers?
Yeah. So currently we have a 24/7 crisis line that people can call. We have mobile services where we'll go out into the community and meet with people wherever they need us. And we also have that walk-in piece, so people can come 24/7. Right now, we're at 616 Main Street in Honesdale, so that's where we operate out of. But once we move into the new center, there will be two programs within there. So downstairs will be that 24/7 walk-in. It's kind of like an urgent care for mental health crisis. The goal is to, you know, give people a place to go, an alternative to the emergency room during a mental health crisis, where they can come in and immediately meet with a specialist. And then the upstairs program is a crisis residential program. So that is up to a 5-day stay. There are 8 beds within the upstairs program, and it's all voluntary. So the goal is just to provide people a place that they could go to before having to take that step into an inpatient treatment center.
Talk a little bit more about the walk-in aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's open to anyone. Do you need insurance? Do you have to worry about those things? I mean, is it open for addressing what you say is like that moment of mental health need?
Yeah. So it's open to every single person, any age. It is also no cost. You can walk in 24/7. There will be multiple crisis workers on staff throughout that 24/7 period. And yeah, there's really no limit. If you need us, come in, even if you just need a place to kind of sit down and ground yourself when you're going through just a tough emotional time, we want to provide that space for people.
Are there emerging or newer programs that you're launching or recently launched to meet the changing community needs?
I think the center itself meets that need,
in
you
Wayne
know?
County. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that that is just a great opportunity for us. But then for myself as outreach coordinator, a big part of what I'm doing is trying to get out into the community and have those conversations with people and raise that awareness, because I think sometimes that is where people don't know what's available to them.
Well, yeah. Is that one of the biggest challenges, is the awareness?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I would say that a lot of times I'll go to an event and talk to somebody, and it might be their first time hearing about what crisis services really are. And I think that building that awareness will only help us grow.
I think it's also sort of a new idea for someone too, right? Who may not be aware of their own mental health needs. You understand like a medical need in terms of a physical, you know, injury or something like that. But when it comes to that aspect, that's something new for someone. And then also then knowing the service is there available at no cost to come in and help.
Yeah, definitely. I think that if anything, I hope that this center like just jumpstarts that conversation for people to have about their mental health. And I think that we have to remember, you know, it's all one thing, you know, our medical things that we deal with are in the same vein as those mental health those mental health situations that we deal with.
So awareness is an issue of you're working to overcome as outreach coordinator.
Yeah.
What about other issues that are challenging? Funding, staffing, are those things pretty well set, or are those still some challenges that the center faces?
Yeah, I think we're pretty well set. I think that the county is really backing this program and has done a great job through like the grant process and all of that with really setting up the center for success. And I think that we also have had the opportunity to build our workforce. So we also now have a really good amount of amazing crisis workers that will be at the center. And then within the crisis residential program, there's also going to be a full mental health staff up there with nurses, licensed nurse practitioners, psychiatrists, therapists. So we're lucky that it has been going well, but we just want to keep growing.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Victoria Toomey, Outreach Coordinator for the new Center for Community Resources in Honesdale in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. How do you reach out to folks to make them aware of this? And in mm-hmm. some of those hard-to-reach populations, too, or underserved populations in the community, and what strategies have you found to be effective in doing that outreach?
Yeah, I think that, you know, everywhere is different, but in Wayne County specifically, it's a very tight-knit community. And I think that a big way to connect people is just sitting down face-to-face and talking with them. So I found that going to community events and connecting with people, that has been really impactful for me as well. I think it's great to, you know, see people face-to-face and get to talk to them about what the center is. And it's always exciting when I leave an event and I know that there's multiple new people that are like, wow, I didn't know that was a thing, you know, to bring that awareness to it. So I think that has been great. And also just trying to get creative in the outreach that I'm doing and finding those areas that maybe don't know about us and that are excited to learn about it.
An open house is one of those creative ways. Yes. Talk about the open house coming up and what folks can expect.
Yes. So the open house is this Friday, December 12th. The doors open at 12 p.m. People can come and meet the team, take a tour of the facility, and just learn a little bit more about those services. I think that we take every opportunity we can get to you know, share what we can provide to the community. So we're really excited about that. And I'm so excited for people to see the building. I know this project has been in the works for quite some time in Honesdale. So it's really exciting.
So where can folks get more information or get in touch?
Yeah. So our website is ccrinfo.org. And the Wayne County crisis number is 833-557-3224. And even if you're from a different county, you can call that number. We'll connect you with where you need to go. But we also like to let people know that even if you're just looking for community resources or looking for local providers, don't hesitate to call that number. It doesn't have to feel like the end of the world to make that call. So,
and we've been talking a little bit about stigma around mental health and just like knowing these services are available. What do you think is a good first step for somebody who might want to take advantage and access these services?
Yeah, I think the best way to go about it is to just pick up the phone and give that number a call. I think that we have amazing crisis workers that are there 24/7 to support you through that, and they can help you figure out what that next step might look like for you. It's different for everybody. It might be a higher level of treatment. It might just be connecting with a local provider or starting therapy, but we can help, you know, guide people through that.
You mentioned you're on Main Street now in Honesdale, mm-hmm. but that there's going to be a newer facility opening. When's that happening and where's that?
Yeah, so that's what our open house is for. It's the new, it's called the Northeast Regional Crisis Stabilization Center. It's at 100 Park Street, Honesdale, PA. And that is what, you know, this whole project is leading up to, is to going into that center. So we're just very excited to be in that new facility. It's beautiful. And I think it'll be really impactful on the community.
What's your hope for the center as it, you know, opens up now and continues to serve the community?
Yeah.
I
think that it's, you know, we've been in Wayne County since 2021, and I think there's already been so much growth. But with this new center, now there's, you know, a new place for people to go and continue to learn about that, about our services, and to help break down that stigma. So I'm hoping we just continue to grow and help serve our community.
Well, and I just wanted to say thank you for coming over. You're the outreach coordinator, and I offered you the opportunity to join us by phone, so you didn't have to make the trip. But you've shown that you're out there and making a connection with folks to help folks know more about this. So
thank you for
we'll give you
me.
The tour after this.
Yes, perfect.
Victoria Toomey is the outreach coordinator for the Center for Community Resources, and that open house is this Friday. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, We've got local economic perspective from our own local economist, James B. Huntington. That's next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Laura Flanders. Join me Monday evenings at 7 on Radio Catskill for Laura Flanders and Friends. It's the show where the people who say it can't be done take a back seat to the people who are doing it. Then stay with us for three more Powerhouse Talk programs back to back. Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk at 7:30, The Janice Adams Show at 8, and La Voz en Breve with Mariel Fiore at 9. Monday evenings, starting at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character. Join us Saturdays at 10:30 for stories from fascinating characters of the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania, right here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's Monday. Working 9 to 5. Time to check in with James B. Huntington, local economist and author, for some local economic perspective. James B., hi.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
All right. Well, let's jump in and talk about consumer prices. What's happened with those in the most recent report?
Yes, the recent report's data was a little old because of the government shutdown, but it was the most recent personal consumption expenditures index, and it showed for the month of September that prices increased an average of 0.3% monthly, which is about 3.8% annually. That's higher. However, compared with the same time last year, prices were up 2.8%, which is up only a tenth of a percent from last time. We had consumer spending was looking good, $94.5 billion overall in personal income over the past year. And otherwise, that's where we ended up.
Okay. Well, last time we were talking about the prices, the sales, I mean, for the Black Friday sales were pretty good. What about Cyber Monday? How did those go?
Well, first, we clocked $44 billion in sales Friday through Sunday overall. That data came in.
Wow.
As far as Cyber Monday, a week ago today, we had $14.25 billion in online sales. That's going up. It's getting to be a thing. It's about just over 7% higher than last year and a hair better than some projections were. A lot of sale items, they reported that the most common things that were on sale were computers, televisions, and furniture, which were all around 20% discounts. So it was competitive discounts. That was the word, what people said, what happened. There were people fighting it out, each with their own deals, and whoever was better or whatever turned out the best. So for the month of November, it was $137 billion. They threw that number in, too. And that was another 7-plus percent increase. So even though there are a lot of consumers are hurting, money is still being spent, especially online.
And also, there's a lot of scams out there, too, for the holidays. What are some of those scams that people should be aware of that are becoming more common this holiday season?
Yes, well, what we're seeing is AI-based imposter attacks. AI is getting awfully good at imitating voices, so you may get a call from your adult child saying that they need help badly, they need money, but as much as it hurts, verify, call them and see if they have any idea what you're talking about, because people are faking these things and looking for ways of getting money and stashing it away, often in Bitcoin accounts where they can't be taken back easily at all. We also have package scams, people getting text messages saying their package is delayed, and it sends them to a link to reschedule the delivery, however, that is designed to steal login credentials and financial details and possibly to install malware. We're also getting fake online stores and phantom deals. Sometimes prices are very good, but they'll vary something by one character from the name of Target or Amazon or Walmart or whatever, and that's their own bogus thing. If you get things that say 70% off holiday mega sales or something like that, then think about what you're hearing. Also, fraudulent charities and imposter donations. It's the same kind of thing going where, be careful. If you're giving money to charity online, I would take it from the top, and I would, instead of responding to emails or texts, just go to the site itself. You won't have this problem.
Right.
So otherwise, it's important, trust your gut. If it doesn't feel right or if it looks too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah.
Same old advice, but it still works.
Still works. You mentioned crypto. I want to jump ahead to one of the stories you have here for us about cryptocurrency, and it's a slide. It's rattling Wall Street. Why is that happening?
Well, we took a real dump. I mean, down $20,000 for Bitcoin a couple of weeks ago, and that's having more of an effect on other things than some of us might have thought. So we're getting reassurance here that this is no longer a hobbyist asset class, that we have some governments indeed that are buying it, and more people putting large money into it, putting it in their portfolios and things. We also have more borrowed money in the market. People are doing exactly what they shouldn't do and borrowing money to make investments, especially crypto. They look at how high they've gone and think, oh, I can just pay 10% or whatever, and it's gone up 25% over the last year. Well, if you're going to be in real trouble if you don't cover that. That's how a lot of bad things have happened, when people buy in effect on margin or by borrowing money and not having it. So a lot of Wall Street pros are now seeing Bitcoin volatility as a signal for wider market instability. So they're concerned. Since this article was printed, it has recovered somewhat. It's gone up about 10,000, but Bitcoin is still about 20,000 lower than what it was most of the time a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So this does have an effect, and it's important that I report it, even if a lot of people don't have it, because it's telling us in general something about how the market is doing, because it is very much part of the market these days.
Talking about the markets and how some of the folks who do well in those markets get there, what's the single thing that most millionaires did to get to that level? Was it crypto?
Well, no, actually it was not. It's older than that. Yes, they talk mostly about quiet millionaires, which make up the great majority of millionaires, people you don't know who aren't talking about it, who haven't had very, very lucrative careers. They've just been handling money different, mainly, is the big thing. So what do you do with it? Do you spend it? Do you save it? The single most important thing, you had to name one thing they did, is they built wealth slowly, steadily, and consistently over decades. They put money in, they left it alone, it was well invested, and when you get into the decades, the ups and downs really even out, and they become quite small over time, according to really any measure of asset performance over the decades. The best thing you can do is when you're in your 20s, if you do have a good income, is sock a good chunk of it away, whatever you can stand, because interest, compound interest, really does a big thing when you're talking about 30 or 40 years or some such. You don't have to have that advantage. You can clean up your act and get moving forward when you're a lot older than your 20s and still get a lot going. So that's what's important, and live within your means, just basic homely advice, and invest whatever you can and watch it grow.
And maybe be a little quiet.
Yes.
All right. You always have the answers to everything, James B. So here's this one. How long does it really take to charge an electric car?
Okay. I had been looking for a piece like this, and this came out in USA Today, actually. Turns out there are really three levels of charging speeds for electric vehicles. They're level one, which is what you would have at home. Some people are charging them at home. It can be done. Level two, which is something stronger, which is generally about 2 to 5 times the kilowatts for level two than they are. You might find them in home or workplace or some public charging. Then we have level three, which is direct current fast charging, which is the best. It's sort of like the high-speed internet of charging electric cars. You'll see that those at stations along highways, 50 to 350 kilowatts. So what we're looking at here is if you have level one, if you do it in your house, it will take you from zero to fully charged in about 30 to 70 hours. That's a long time, but if you're only driving it on weekdays and you put it there Friday and start charging it at home, you could do it. You could get it, and they do not need to be fully charged in order to run. The second kind is usually running about 4 to 12 hours for using level 2 equipment. So it's longer, but it's substantially quicker than you're getting into the range where you can do it in an evening or whatever and have it good the next day. And the fastest one of all is usually an 80% charge they recommend for that, but it only takes 20 minutes to an hour for the direct current fast charging to get up to 90%. So getting closer to what it takes to fill up a car with gas, and it probably will continue to get faster. But these are what I'm seeing on this report right now as of the end of November.
All right. Well, let's talk about those prices. Were they supercharged today, and how did they change?
Well, not really. There were some good ones here. Let's see. Gold over the past week, 1 week for everything, $42.08, down $41. It took pause this week. It didn't really drop a lot, but it just didn't do very much. A little surprising because silver, $58.34, went up $1.04. That's higher. That's close to somewhere around an all-time high now. The ratio between gold and silver is 72 to 1. It keeps dropping. It gets lower. For some reason, silver is very strong, and it's affordable also because you can buy small quantities of it for rather more reasonable amounts than gold. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 47,955 as of very early this morning, plus 239. A good week overall, but certainly quite valuable. 239 is a good individual day, so we had sort of one of those, and the rest broke even. NASDAQ, though, 23,578, up 212, which is about double this, the proportion that the Dow went up. Even better. They're obviously thinking good thoughts these days, and the AI is going to have a bubble talk, must be winding down. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $59.54 the barrel, down 28 cents. Guess what? I finally saw it showing up at the pump. It seemed to take weeks. I know we have oil rockets when it goes up and feathers when it comes down, but it's been a while. But I was in New Jersey, not that far from our listening area. It was as low as 267. Wow. So it's a good time. I mean, I am optimistic myself that this will carry through to propane, because I'm due for a $3,000 fill coming up pretty soon. So let's cross our fingers for all of us and hope that it stays low. Bitcoin, 92,005. That is like 10,000 more than it was before. It went up over 5,000 this past week. Is it coming back or not? We'll see. British pound, 1.3318, up almost a penny, up 2 cents over the past 2 weeks. Euro, 1.1653, up a third of a cent. Not as much, but still going. And the Japanese 100 yen once again sat at 64 cents. So overall, for the next week, watch silver, NASDAQ, and Bitcoin. They are going to decide. They're the odd ones, and they're going to decide how the week turns out in general, whether we win or break even or lose.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it, and then we'll check in with you next Monday. James B. Huntington with Local Economic Perspective. Thank you very much, and have a great week.
Thanks. You too, Tim, and thank you, listeners.
Use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Sullivan Public's third annual holiday market is back this weekend. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, the exotic sounds of Ima Sumac from her classic album Voice of the Ixtabe, plus one incredibly strange record from the 1950s. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
We believe nonpartisan, nonprofit news is essential to a healthy community. And as a Radio Catskill listener, we're guessing you feel the same way. We deliver fact-based journalism that holds the powerful accountable and keeps our community informed. Every story we produce is powered by listeners like you. And right now, through December 31st, your gift to Radio Catskill will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $1,000, by Newsmatch. Support local news and information. Give now at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll get ready for some holiday cheer. Sullivan Public is hosting its third annual holiday market this weekend, featuring some local makers, art, and more. Joining us now is Jesse Lazar to give us a closer look at what's in store this year. Jesse, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, talk about this third year now. How has the market grown or changed since its first year?
Well, the first obvious answer is that I know what I'm doing now. You know, it's been really amazing to watch it grow, because we've realized we have these fixtures of people that, you know, people come and visit, and this is like an annual gift that they want to share with their family. So we have vendors that are coming back that are, fan favorites. And then there's always new energy and new people, and Sullivan Public has been growing, and we have new members of our community there that we're celebrating. So it's a great mix of, classic favorites and brand new energy. So it's a little bit different this year, but also, you know, always the kind of community-centered event that we always aim for this to be.
So give us a sense of the variety of makers and vendors that are going to be there at the holiday market this year.
Okay, so this is where I like see how quickly I can speak. Because there's so many. We have 15 vendors coming this year. So MoMA Global Flowers is an amazing biodynamic farm. They grow flowers and do all kinds of events outside of Jeffersonville. So she's coming. Kaya's going to be there, and she's also bringing these very beautiful Japanese, these traditional wreaths that are made out of materials that were like woven and hammered grasses that have been woven into these beautiful wreaths. We have a new vendor who's exciting, Lil Junebug. She's a local mom who sews the most amazing children's clothing out of upcycled fabric, so like beautiful patchwork pants, and she makes tree skirts and stuff for your home too. We have vintage favorites, Dee Smet and Nothing New, who always bring amazing collections of vintage clothing and accessories. We have two new tenants actually that are sharing our space at Sullivan Public, which is a very exciting new addition. It's a women-owned business. They have vintage furniture and home goods. And they have an excellent eye, and they're just generally kind of amazing ladies, running two businesses called Concrete Spa and Surface and Shape. And they also have a repair shop. So during the holiday market, you can bring a sweater that has a moth hole in it or a piece of furniture with a wobbly leg. They can kind of do anything. They're pretty spectacular craft repair women. So they're running a Santa's workshop where they will be collecting things that you need repaired. We also, another new member of our community at Sullivan Public is we have two artists, Kristen Texiera and Travis Weber are painters who now run their private studios out of Sullivan Public, the same way that I always had my pottery studio there. They're now painting there, which is really great. Their work is amazing. And they're going to have an open studio. So you can.
Whoops. Did we lose you there? Jesse is still there. There we are. We lost you for just a second.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No worries.
So that's another wonderful addition. We're going to have food. We're going to have hard cider. Our after-school class, we run after-school classes 3 days a week. The chorus, the kids' chorus is going to perform, which is going to be super sweet. So there's holiday cheer in every iteration happening this weekend. Yeah.
Lots of holiday cheer.
Yeah.
For folks who may have not been, what's sort of a must-see thing that they have to do or visit? Or why do you think it's a must-visit holiday event for folks?
You know, I think that because we've been around for a little while and we're still kind of exciting, we attract a huge swath of our community. It's local families that have been here for generations. It's new folks. It's Airbnb visitors. I think that you get a really special sense of who's enjoying our like little mountain community up there in Sullivan Public. I work very hard to make sure that everybody that comes and sells stuff at our market is really excellent. So it's, I hate the word curated, but it is. It's this really thoughtful collection of people that really make things with their hands with really incredible skill.
Yeah.
But there's this sort of energy of community celebration and like, we might have a Claus visitor and we have, you know, like neighbors that come and, you know, share a drink or share a lunch. And so I think it's got this really special energy. And I think more than anything else, I mean, yes, you can buy great gifts and you can come and you can see your neighbors. But more than anything, I think you get this really warm, positive, celebratory, community-oriented energy. And I think that that's what we're all looking for in the woods this time of year, I think.
Yeah. Well, and then supporting local makers, you know, knowing that those folks are out there and you're supporting them, especially now. And what kind of response have you seen from the local community these past 3 years?
You know, it's been great. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen when we took over this, like, dilapidated 3,400-square-foot garage. You know, you never know. It's sort of a gamble. We worked really hard. Like, we sweat a lot trying to fix this place up. We have been so supported and encouraged. And, you know, neighbors have shown up with work gloves on every time, you know, a big truck comes to deliver something. People have really pitched in and helped. It felt like we filled a hole. Like, maybe people needed a new space to commune and see their neighbors and celebrate local makers and have lunch. And also, you know, the after-school classes and the workshops and all these things that we offer. I think everybody needs that. Everybody's grandchild needs a free art class on Sunday. And so I think we have felt very much embraced and supported. And I think that's why we keep growing and why we keep kind of being able to reinvent and fill new holes that are needed in the area, because People come to our doors and they're like, hey, I've got this great thing I want to sell, or hey, I've got this thing I want to teach and share. So it's felt really well. It feels like every year we sort of take stock this time of year, and it feels like we've really come quite a long way, just in the past year, let alone the past three.
All right. So the annual holiday market, third annual, is this weekend. Let's remind folks about details. Anything they should know before coming, hours, parking, anything else?
There's plenty of parking, so don't worry about that. We're open Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 4 this year. And I don't think that there's anything else you really need to know. Just come. You can have lunch. You can have a drink. You can, on Sunday, there's, you know, special events on Sunday. There's going to be special stuff throughout the weekend. You have to, it's across from PEX. It's in Eldred, across from PEX, next to the post office, behind the library, which is not really very, not easily navigated without that slogan. So, we hope you'll find us in Eldred this weekend.
And if there were going to be some, Claus visitors, and you had a, you know, a young one that might want to see them, when would those folks be attending?
We haven't gotten, the reindeer have not delivered the official attendance hours yet, but we anticipate that they'll be in and out throughout the entire weekend.
Your people are still working with their people.
Yes. All these elves, everybody's very busy. It's like it's high season for the elves right now. So everybody's very busy, but we promise they'll be in and out throughout the weekend. So if you come by and you hang out for a little while, we think that you'll find, a stylish vintage 1960s costumed Claus to greet you.
That's Jesse Lazar of Sullivan Public. They have their third annual holiday market this weekend. There's more information at sullivanpublic.com. Jesse, thank you for joining us today. Have a great market and happy holidays.
Thank you to you too. I always so appreciate you letting me come on and share the message. So thank you, Ken.
Well, and thanks for supporting those local makers too. And I might be in line for those repairs. I have a couple of those sweaters. All right, thank you.
Oh yeah, bring it on. They're really good.
Thank you so much.
See you then.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder: you can hear our show and all of the great shows that are produced by our local DJs and volunteers at our website, wjffradio.org. Just go to the website and go to the nav bar there at the top, and where it says shows, just click on that. You'll see local shows, podcasts, the schedule. All of them are there. wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you. Hi, I'm Andy Carlson, a volunteer on-air host here at Radio Catskill. I'd like to wish everyone listening a happy, healthy holiday full of love and good cheer. From all of us here at Radio Catskill, thank you for listening. Have a safe and festive holiday season, and Happy New Year.
Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, for decades, private equity has delivered big returns to institutional and ultra-wealthy investors.
Those funds beat the S&P 500, which is just remarkable.
But now, private equity is opening to retail investors. Will this be a gold rush or maybe fool's gold?
I think the party is over in the private markets.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, the forecast that cold front is still here with us. Very cold today, 22 for a high. Clear, frigid tonight, low of 2 degrees. Cold continues tomorrow with some possibility of afternoon snow, up to about an inch of snow forecast by the National Weather Service tomorrow afternoon. Some of that snow could stick and cause slick surfaces in the afternoon, so be aware if you're out. 23 for the high tomorrow, 18 for the low, warming back up to 32 for Wednesday, and still the possibility of 1 to 2 inches of snow.
Support comes from the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg,
whose 21st annual Small Works group exhibition, Art and Sixes, will be on view from November 15th until December 21st. More information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. Information and schedule at CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.